Welcome to Cliff's Wujo. A dojo is a place in which the martial arts are practiced. A wujo is a place in which the wu-wu arts are practiced. The wu-wu arts are all things officially denied and everything unknown. Good morning. Today is April 8th. It's 7:13 a.m. here on the Pacific coast of the North American continent. Political subdivision is these United States. Today's subject is a bunch of updates and little notes. Wanted to start off with the issue of the data types. I have identified that we do have a potential to reach through the immediacy data and tunnel in, if you will, to the shorter term and the longer term data sets. The shorter term data sets are sparse, but they are there. I'm starting to get some of the numeric indicators that show me the shift between the immediacy data and the shorter term data. Why there should be this immediacy data bow wave, I do not know. There has been an organic change within the nature of the language itself. So, to a certain extent, all bets are off. We're back in unknown territory, like in 1997, where we're not really sure that the algorithms are going to work. I've got Igor redoing some of the spiders and some of the scripts for storage, so that we will be able to ascertain just what the weighted averages are for all the different data types as a running total. So we can actually see if there's a shift over time or if we're dealing with a shift in a continuous state. The plan at the moment is that we'll have a sufficient, we hope, levels of shorter-term data. No indications of longer-term data at all so far, but we hope to have sufficient levels of shorter-term data to start archetype separations. Maybe Monday next, so maybe around the 15th to the 16th, 17th, something like that, I'll be able to start looking to see how the archetypes are going to separate. If that is the case, then I'm looking at perhaps an additional 22 to 25 days before being able to get any kind of a written report out, which clearly shoves us all into probably around the 10th or 11th of May. At that stage. So there we go. That's the best we can do right at the moment. It's still an unknown. While we have a very little in the way of short-term data, the sample that I've been looking at and some of the subroutines that I've run indicate a clustering of the shorter-term data so far within only two archetypes, and we're looking at the economic archetype over, or being the larger of the two, the grander superset, which brings up a lot of other issues relative to the economy. The flow of the data that we've got right now, as well as previous data sets, indicate that sometime in this summer, we're going to see a real crash of the Dow. This is really baked in the cake at this stage. Because we've got the situation in Europe, it's the nature of the paper currency to die. It is meaningful that the charter given to the Federal Reserve was 100 years and we're in year 99. They knew it would crap out, and so why bother trying to get a charter for 200 years or something along those lines? The lifespan of it was engineered, and they've struggled to keep it going this long. So the dollar woes will start, as predicted, when the euro woes get worse, which will be through the rest of this month and into May. Our data has always shown that we were looking at a very large potential shift in the, which I'd labeled the greatest wealth transfer in history. And that's likely to begin in early, pre-summer, before the solstice, so in spring, really, but let's just say around the Labor Day, around first part of June, really, we expect a major shift in the economy to start coming out, in spite of all of the happy talk. Now, I can be wrong. They can indeed do all kinds of things, back channel, quantitative easing, all of this sort of thing, that would prop us up. It's their intent to prop the powers that be, to prop us up until the election. After that, I don't think they care. So they may be able to do that. If they can, great. More power to them. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It's my contention that it won't occur that way, and that in spite of their best efforts, the minion class and the powers that be and the political class and the military class to a certain extent that's involved at that level anyway, will be set upon by a whole series of karmic reoccurrences that will start manifesting actually around the 17th or 18th of April. And work their way through our system from the 18th of April through May into June, and then we'll have a great denouement in the sense of a lot of stuff coming out. The secrets revealed metadata layer will have really bitten in and taken hold, and its teeth will be sunk into the flesh of the body politic, especially the economic component, and we'll start seeing stuff come out that will change people's minds. That's what's going to occur. The economy is shit now. They're lying to you, telling you that that it's not shit, and they're trying to dress it all up and animate it and make you think it has some life in it, but it does not. It's going to come out a lot sooner than they anticipate. When it comes out, we're going to have to deal with it in a way that we don't have to now. Those people like myself that are living a few years ahead of things are already hunkering down and getting ready to weather the storm, so to speak, but when the data really falls apart and all the happy faces really start shredding on the mainstream media in front of people's eyes, and the rest of the now asleep populace starts to stir, things are going to get a little bit dodgy. It may be that we in the United States face a level of violence and confrontation that is unlike other parts of the planet relative to what they call, the powers that be, call austerity, and the rest of us call starvation and slavery. So let's anticipate that there's a potential in the United States that is unpredictable just because we're unpredictable. We're not a monoculture, we're not monoracial, so there's a big potential for a synergistic effect based on just who we are as a national group. Now, the good news is that we may, as in the rest of the planet, all decide, hey, brother, I'm not pissed at you, I'm pissed at that bastard politician over there, and we may all decide, okay, let's all focus our rage on the system and the machine and the minions and the people on the other side and this sort of thing. There have been lots of indications of that within our data going all the way back to 1999, when it made no sense and it started to make more sense in 2003. And we actually had data sets that described whole gated communities being surrounded by tens of thousands of starving and angry people that just looted the place and then set it afire with mass casualties everywhere. So it was not a good forecast, and I couldn't believe it in 2003. Now, of course, we're getting to a situation where we're seeing the impetus for that kind of action. When you lose everything and your family is starving, you will go and take from the rich. As my relative in France, northern France, says, an old farmer guy, one day we will all eat the rich. Well, if 1% has 99% of the planet's wealth, it is my expectation that the 99% would be fools and would be deserving of their fate if they didn't go and take what they needed to rebuild society and put the 1% in their place, which is as 1%. However, that aside, violence and all of that aside, we need to examine some real issues here. As we go forward, it becomes quite clear that the quote, recession will deepen into a depression. Now, it is a depression now, and the semantics that are bandied about on mainstream media, notwithstanding, what's actually going to occur is a shift in people's perceptions, and it is the perception that will be quite powerful this summer, the perceptional shift. That will get people to understand we are in a depression, and there is no way out. at the moment with a recession, that's why they labeled it and redefined the whole thing, was because they don't have to struggle to get you out of a recession. A recession is, quote, a natural dip in the economy from which you have a natural expectation of recovery. Well, we don't have that with depression. If you say the depression word, there is no expectation of recovery. There's just expectation of generation after generation of despair. That's why they don't like using that word. This word and its context will come around to slap us all in the face like a wet fish, which we'll get back to in a minute, this summer. When it does, it will make sense if you're unemployed to change your attitude as well. Basically, I'm unemployed, have been for decades. I'm not a very good employee. I'm a very terrible worker for somebody because I always question and bitch and moan about stupidity, and so they end up firing me. But that's neither here nor there. But it did, getting fired a lot, teach me to look for work and not for jobs. Again, a mental perception that is extremely important, because once you make the connection that, oh, I don't need a job, I just need work. And if I've got work and I add value to universe and someone pays me for that, basically, to hell with a job. Then you just sort of own your own state, because whenever you need money or resources, you go on out and trade your work, whatever it is, for the stuff you need. And we need to get back to that understanding of how we have to make a way among all of us together, because the managed central economy is dying on us. And those who fail to realize this will be standing there when it falls over as a dead corpse and squashes them flat. The rest of us can scurry out of its way, and then after it's fallen over, we can go on in and salvage what we need to rebuild a much better, peaceful, and economically more egalitarian social order. Get rid of these 1% goofy fellows. In order to look for work, as opposed to looking for a job, you need to not look even necessarily for somebody advertising for, come and help me put my roof on or something. But what you do need to do is to look for areas in which you can add value to universe, and then maybe find somebody that you can point that out to who has the wherewithal to pay you for it. I'm convinced that the adding of value to universe brings value back to you in this feedback loop. I'm a living example of it all of these decades. So it seems that if everyone were to, or if you were in a situation where you needed to, and you put your mind to the idea of, okay, I'm going to find work, I'm going to add value to universe, and then try and figure out somebody to pay for it all, you may find that the latter part there, finding people to pay for it, is less of an issue. Universe may do that part for you. Universe can be very accommodating if you get into harmony with it and start going with the flow. Then you'll find that it's easier to swim with that particular current. You just need to find one you harmonize with. So enough of our little projection there. Now let me tell you how severe it's going to get. I've been in contact with readers and friends of mine in Greece and throughout Europe. It's extremely bad there and getting worse. New structures in society are emerging in which people try and feed themselves. The calorie economy is shifting forward very rapidly. This will get even worse for Greece now that the Iranian oil shipments are shut off, and they're going to be facing some rather interesting choices as they go forward. We don't know how this is going to play out for them. What we can say, though, is that in these United States, on the North American continent, we will be facing the same conditions before the summer is out, ubiquitously. In other words, the whole process is going to start here in the United States, probably in around, like I say, about the 18th, 19th of this month, April, and move forward through May as this certain information comes out. Then there's a mental shift. Then there's impacts on the numbers, the numerics of the stock market and so on through end of May into pre-summer, early June. And then we really get into it as we get into the actual official summer. And that's going to be hugely impacting, because lots of the just-in-time and the social order system will be begin to break down. This is basically the area that we had labeled as social chaos, and it's global. It's going to be manifesting here in the United States this year, 2012. It's going to be very severe. There are things we can do to manage it and manage our relationship to it as long as we keep our wits about us and go forward with some pre-planning and understanding of what we're going to be facing. So we may be facing things like the shutdown of ATMs, we may be facing the actual use of electricity and the electrical grid as a method of population management by the powers that be as they decide, oh, we don't want to have riots there, let's just shut off all the street lights and power and make them, you know, I don't know what their point would be, but we do have that in the data that the electrical grid and its turning on and off will be a political weapon as the populace gets a little bit out of hand, actually quite a bit out of hand, and we move into the revolution phase. So that'll be coming this summer. Now, along with that, as a component of that, as an impetus to that for lots of people, is the shift from the central bankster and warfare model economy globally into the calorie economy globally, which, if we're correct, what Priest says, the emergence of Civilization One. Now, Civilization One, just to be clear, these are the local boys that have the flying triangular craft and the great big tubular things that the triangular craft go to out there, and they may be associated with the huge, giant, big, boxy spacecraft thingies out there as well. But they're local guys. They're not space aliens. And they're going to be really hurting for pie and bread and that sort of thing. So they'll come and they'll trade us devices for food later on. We're getting back, as I say, to a calorie economy. This is the case in Greece. It's moving northward through Europe. It'll probably be last resident in Germany. But I suspect that this summer we'll see huge amounts of verbiage coming out of England and the greater British Isles about the shift into a calorie economy as people try and cope because of the waves of unemployment and the various different kinds of hardships that individuals are going to have to face. So just to leave the one subject alone here, we're shifting out of an economy where people will have jobs and work for corporations, and we're shifting over to an economy where some portion of the populace will be outside of the corporate world for some duration of their lifespan. And they will need to figure another way to make a living and make a life. And so they'll need to look for work, barter opportunities, and new ways to do things, to make a way. You know, basically, we're only limited by our imagination, so let's not let our imagination be the end of it. In fact, I have this little saying that I took from Buckminster Fuller, and it's, no matter how rough it gets for me, at any given time, I have a little saying I can always pop out. It gets me through it, and it's stupid as a saying, but it really goes to the core of it, and it's like any other great lie. It becomes true after a while, and what it is I say to myself that at the core of my being, I refuse to allow this, whatever this is, to defeat me. In other words, I can always figure a way around it. I figure a way to lift that obstacle, destroy it, shift it, get around it, whatever, in order to make a way and overcome. And it's the same thing that the Marines use, you know, adapt, innovate, and overcome, that kind of thing. So it really does go to the point, though, that here we now are facing a situation of shifting into a calorie economy in the United States. What makes it a little bit more difficult for us than Europe is that we've had a longer history of being embedded in the JIT, which is J-I-T, or just-in-time economy. So if you'll notice, there's no warehouses around where you live. There are no giant stores of food. There's no huge giant boxes filled with toilet paper, cleaning solutions, sugar, coffee, tobacco, any of this. Our entire structure for our social order exists in movement. This was a system that came on in through I think a guy's name was Drucker, in the 50s. It's an elegant system. It works very well. It saves you, as at an economic level, all of the resources that are put into staged warehouses. We used to have a huge infrastructure in warehouses. Warehousemen used to be, in fact, a very large component of our social order in terms of the economy, almost as large in terms of hiring, at one point, as construction. There was many people moving stuff in, sorting it, and this kind of thing, as existed building houses. So our economy has shifted, though. We got into a situation where the just-in-time economy freed up all kinds of individuals. They actually went into construction. It put pressure on construction wages, drove down the construction wages, and curiously, at the same time, allowed the expansion of a construction workforce through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, such that by the time we hit the late 80s here in the United States, we were building strip malls and other forms of retail sites five times faster than our population growth. I don't know what we were figuring, but our construction engine just went crazy, and then it turned itself onto houses in the right after the crash in 2000, and we had the huge housing boom, which was and then the construction industry basically burned itself out. In previous recessions, it would also oscillate. It would stop building houses and go back to building strip malls. But now we've got strip malls that need to be torn down. Pretty soon we won't need a construction industry. We'll need a destruction industry. However, at the moment, we're dealing with a very difficult transition into the calorie economy, and that will stress the just-in-time warehouse system. So I expect much of it to break down. I don't know where the breakdown will come in. I don't know what the components of it are, but I'm already worried about the existing stresses on the just-in-time system, especially the food component of it. And at this point, just due to the radioactivity, because we're getting slammed by radioactivity from Fukushima, there's other sources that are going to be popping up. So even if the just-in-time system holds up, there's going to be areas of its delivery that I won't want to participate in simply because I'll suspect that that particular food source is radioactive. I mean, it's gotten so bad I have to go on out and sweep the rhubarb before making a strawberry rhubarb pie. Fortunately, the rhubarb was clean, and it was a low disintegration day. We only had, I think, about 70 clicks a minute. So that's pretty low for these days. In any event, though, so the just-in-time system is going to come under pressure through June, July, and August and start cracking through June, July, and August, and in fact is already cracking. If you look in certain store shelves and you know what to look for, you'll find signs that the just-in-time system has holes in it and it's not filling the needs the way that it used to. This is going to get extremely severe, especially if we get into any kind of a war footing with China, since everything that we consume that isn't food and a lot of the quasi-food comes from China. So something to bear in mind. The closer we get to war with China, if you have things that you're dependent upon, medicines or whatever, that are made from China, you may want to stock up. Secondary issue there, though, is that the just-in-time system itself, regardless of what the source is, for the material flowing through it, is itself at risk as we go forward here, not strictly due to oil pressure, that kind of thing, but due to the general economic conditions that we're all going to be having to face. Bearing in mind that much of the impetus and the method, the grease, the lubrication that gets stuff into the just-in-time warehousing system that basically is all those trucks and train cars and so on, anyway, the lubrication for it all are what are known as letters of credit. And with the banks not loaning and the economic system under a great deal of stress, we're seeing letters of credit not being issued. Therefore, people can't get their material into the system to get it to Walmart or whoever. And it doesn't get in there. And thus, we end up with store shelves that have holes in them. So, brings us back to our just-in-time economy and the breakdown of it and the transition to a calorie economy for a lot of us. How many of us is going to be, well, quite certain at the end that we'll shift 100% into a new calorie economy based around the new electrics. At some point, Civilization 1 will come on out desperate for some Marionberry pie, and we'll swap some pie for a couple of free energy generators. And off we go. Then we got a basis for an understanding between us and these guys. We make good pie. They make energy generators. Hey, we're all happy. Anyway, my particular response, which is the point of this, is to say that I've decided that I can't risk the omnivores that I live with, their protein independence. I can't risk them being protein dependent on the just-in-time system when I suspect that the just-in-time system is going to crash. I'm not really in a position where I want to either grow, deal with, or slaughter chickens, which is a potential. It works for some people to get into that level of livestock. It just doesn't for me for a lot of different reasons. But I am prepared. I'm at the process right now of getting all this stuff together to work it all out. I am prepared to grow fish. And our dogs and Kathy can eat fish as a source of primary source of protein. If it comes down to it, I suppose I will too if we get to the point where even vegetarian diets are put at risk simply because not being able to get stuff. Also, the fish offer an opportunity to trade, something I'm familiar with. I'm trained in aquaculture. So what I've decided to go for, because I have the grow domes, is to convert a larger section of the one grow dome to aquaponics, and then the smaller new grow dome I'm going to actually shift from its low-light area up to a new high-light, high-energy area for the winter and convert it 100% to aquaponics with the intent of growing fish, probably. I don't think I'll get into any of the other exotics, shrimp, crab, lobster, or shellfish, all of which could be cultured indoors under the grow domes. I don't think I'll get into those. We have a lot of those in abundance around here, although, of course, now we're getting back to the radioactivity issue. Now a lot of our wild food sources are threatened, which, back to the calorie economy, you know, basically it's going to come down to he who has the calories is going to have something to bargain with, and we'll probably end up getting a lot of gold, because that's what other people will start trading and proffering for the calories. Anyway, so I've started investigating aquaponics. If you want to get into it, the idea is real simple. You can even do it with a couple of 55-gallon barrels. It's called barrelponics. The best place to look for sources of info would be on YouTube to get you started. Fundamentally, it is a, if you're using the barrelponics approach, you get two barrels, you cut one in half, you put one barrel standing up, that's your fish tank. You pump water out of that up into the two half barrels or quarter barrels that are on top of it that have rocks or other cinder kind of media in it. The fish waste flows through the rocks and cinder media where you grow plants, which deal with the issues of the fish waste. And see, that's really key. Fish farming has never been a particularly profitable in non-wild environments because of the huge amounts of energy required to deal with the fish waste, the ammonia, the various different chemical components, the excess hormones, and all this kind of stuff that get flooded into the water. And if it stays there, it kills off your fish because they're very sensitive. So a closed system fish pond has to be of some size in order to be able to basically naturally meet the detoxification needs, the de-eutrophic effect of the fish in the water. So to do this effectively, grow fish, that is a protein source in your house has been, you know, at your house has been or in your property has been very difficult. Now, it is feasible with the small-scale aquaponics because the plants do a lot of the work for you, do all of the work for you of the remediation of the water. And what they're also doing is taking about a third of the fish water and changing it out every week on some schedule, which also works because you take about a third of the fish waste out and you can use that to water and fertilize all of the garden that isn't hanging over the fish tank. So this is barrelponics. There's some really good YouTube videos on setting them up. It's real straightforward. It requires electricity because you got to pump water there. In my case, I'm going to put them out to an area. That's another reason for moving the smaller dome, is to get it out next to the point where I have my primary electrical outflow from the solar. I'm going to convert or do the whole thing on DC power, which is good because I've got the DC power flowing out of the solar panels, but bad because I've got to go look up DC pumps and this kind of thing so I don't have to get into using my inverter and have the energy loss and so on. In any event, though, you pump water out of the fish tank, you flood your two little sections of plant grow area, you let the plants deal with the nitrogen and the other fish waste, and then you put the returned oxygenated clarified water back in with the fish, and the fish also get this biofilm material that comes from around the roots of the plants, which includes mycelia, yeast. Mycelia are little threads from fungus, and then a yeast and bacteria that the fish consume along with their other food. If you have a large enough pond area or a large enough surface area, you don't have to have the plants in a trays hanging over the water. You can actually have them floating in there in these little styrofoam held up colanders, basically areas that their roots can reach down into the ponds. Now, Kathy has had ponds here for koi and this kind of stuff for years, so it's not a big stretch for us to get into doing this. My goal is to have it all up and running by August or September so that I can start shifting as we need to, as the just-in-time impacts start showing up into our own food production. And again, it's also going to be very key for radiation. The radiation issue is not ubiquitous. It's not evenly spread across the U.S. Apparently, right at the moment, we've got information coming out showing that Portland, Oregon, and I think Golden or Boulder or someplace in Colorado were the two hot spots for the last few months. But it shifts. And now my expectation is the following. I expect that because of what the data had shown 3 years ago when we got into the ill wind stuff, and then also because of certain changes that I've seen in the 600 and the 800 millibar airstream patterns, I suspect that when the next phase of Fukushima goes, that there will be this plume of highly radioactive material that'll make it all the way across the Pacific, and it'll probably strike somewhere in California, just because of where at the time of the year it will be and the wind flow and so on. This is sort of, it may miss Hawaii. There's some real indication that it will do so. I can't say for sure because this is all on a projection based off of the current flow of the 800 millibar data based on what happened last year, as well as some data that I got from our webbot run, like I say, 2 or 3 years ago when we first started getting into the Israeli mistake and also the ill winds going around the planet. If I am correct, though, and this Fukushima has this next big, basically an eruption, and that if we see the eruption and then we also see the radiation being carried directly towards California and it impacts in Southern California, then the following is likely, because it was within the same data set, that the radiation stream at that point will actually veer to the northeast and take off diagonally across the U.S. And this will be one of the first largest events the mainstream media will have to deal with relative to the U.S. radiation. If I am correct, and if the data was correct, and if my interpretation of the data was correct, and the reason that the media will have to deal with it, because it will be because of what will be occurring in Japan at that time, and the huge outflow of Japanese population, as well as, you know, horrific to say, a very large wave of death through Japan due to sudden, intense radiation poisoning. I hope that this does not come to pass. I hope this, I'm very incorrect about it, but realistically we have to face the fact that we're dealing with radiation exposure now that we've never had to grapple with throughout our lifetimes, and it makes sense to do what we can to cope with that. Thus my approach to grow domes and moving as much of my food production inside as I can. In fact, I'm moving all the last of the raspberries and the rhubarb in to the domes here over this next week while trying to get boat stuff done as well. So that's basically it about the shift into the calorie economy at the moment. I won't take up any more of your time. I've got a lot more stuff I need to go into, but I can get into it later on. I've actually got to get to work when we've got a little bit of sun here. So we'll see over the shift into the, by the 18th of April, we'll see the next phase of the Secrets Revealed come on out. I don't think it'll directly relate to the economy. It doesn't necessarily have to, although everything is tied to the economic welfare for all of us. When it does come out and this next plateau is left and we start climbing again and Secrets Revealed, that'll be the point that we'll really have the euro under stress. And then in my last 3 weeks, I don't know, And then thereafter, we see the stresses shift over into North America. Again, I think that'll probably be mid-May or thereabouts. I'm hoping to have a report out by then. No guarantees, though, just based on the data that we've got and the, what I'm going to have to go through to tunnel through for short term. I'm noodling on some ideas as to why it may be occurring. Not that I can do anything about it, but it does give me a better understanding of it. In any event, thank you very much. Get to bitcoins, get to peer-to-peer currency. It's a way of doing non-local barter. And start thinking about how you're going to do things in a breakdown system for a breakdown world where just-in-time system doesn't work anymore and there's big holes in what's available. It's going to really impact all of us. We've gotten used to the just-in-time, gotten soft with it all. Now's the time to start thinking, while we do have the opportunity to shift over in different ways of doing our various, or meeting our various needs and those of our people around us, because as I said earlier, if you can figure a way to add value, somebody somewhere, universe will have pay for it. The universe will come along and poke them and say, hey, go pay that guy. He's adding value here. And it actually sort of works out that way. Anyway, back out to the boat shed and to the domes. Time to get to work.